You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Frascati.
Cozze cittadine, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze cittadine, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Chad, Tom's obviously come down, but tell us what you saw of the crash.
I had my own crash going on. I don't know if he was in the same one or what. Yeah, I was on the left side. I think Tom was a little closer to the middle. But I was upside down in a ditch, trying to get out of the ditch. I have no idea what happened with Tom after that.
We heard that Tom needed a new bike, only we were a little bit stuck behind a first crash, and then yeah, it took us a while to get to Tom, and yeah, we changed bike, but he couldn't push anymore really with his leg, so yeah, that's why he also lost 4 minutes. And yeah, so that's like I said, it's a shit day, and these kind of things happen, and today it happened to us.
Hancock from NOS Television, Dutch TV. I think Tom Dumoulin's just got into an ambulance, hasn't he? What did you see?
I saw him going into the ambulance, and then I asked where they're going. Are they going to the hospital? No, they're going to the X-ray car here at the finish line to make a photo of his wounded knee. I think it's his left knee.
It didn't look good, did it? I saw the blood streaming down his leg. Do you think he's going to carry on in this race?
I think what worried me the most was when he was on his bike in the race, that he couldn't and didn't try to give any effort. If a rider, in all the adrenaline, he's not going to do any effort, then you know it's really something wrong. So I don't think that's a good sign.
What does this mean for you? If he goes home, do you go home?
Maybe not directly, but I think a few days later I will be home, yeah.
Same crash, and there is, you know, when the road is blocked, and after that we arrived in the group with Nibali, Lopez, Simon, myself. Bad luck, a lot of tension, like always in the first weeks in the Grand Tours. Normal for Italy, you know, for the south of Italy, and this is what it is. I can say we are lucky because another guy's more unlucky than us, but it's not really good when you lose a little bit of time. But in the first week, the seconds is a minute in the last week, you know.
So Matt, does that go down as a day which could have been a lot worse?
Definitely. Simon went down in the final today. He got through the first crash, I think it was 6K to go, and then went down on a roundabout, which I think was the same one that Tom went down on. But isn't injured and managed to obviously salvage it quite well, only losing 16 seconds to Roglic in the finish. Our guys did a very good job and had the last hour and a half. Simon was in great position. And I said, escape the first one, and then just he washed out on the second one. I don't know the details, but he was in good position. But you always need a little bit of luck in these finals, but you do make your own.
Everyone was fighting for a position on a roundabout with about 6K to go for me. And yeah, a rider has slid out in front of me. It was nobody's fault. I'm not blaming anybody. It was just everyone's fighting for position, and these things happen. But I got up quickly and had the guys around me to really limit the losses. Of course, I would have preferred to be in front of them. It's one of those things.
We heard there from Chad Hager and Michael Elijan, teammate and sports director respectively of Tom Dumoulin's Sunweb team, and from Han Kok, the Dutch TV equivalent of Daniel Freeb.
You've got to be careful with Han's name, haven't you?
And then from Esteban Chavez, Matt White and Simon Yates of Mitchelton Scott on the second consecutive day on the Giro d'Italia, where crash-related drama has been served up in the final half dozen kilometres.
But who won the stage, Nigel?
The stage was won by Richard Canapaz of Movistar in very fine style from a really small group in the end. We are in Frascati, where the stage finished 235 kilometres officially away from Orbitello, where we started this morning. If you add on the 8.5 kilometres neutralised zone, the second longest neutralised zone of the Giro, that makes a whopping 243.5 kilometres, almost a classic length stage.
A whopper,
but not a classic in terms of racing racing drama or spectacle until it all got thrown up in the air, literally in many cases in the final 5 kilometres.
Yes, Lionel, and the question marks tonight weren't there about whether Tom Dumoulin was going to carry on this Giro. I suppose those question marks persist. We heard from Han Cock there, who was worried about having to, well, he thought he was going to get sent home.
If Dumoulin goes home, does Han go home?
That's what he said. He feared that he'll be watching the rest of this Giro d'Italia from his canapé.
Well,
is it chaise longue, like, probably.
It doesn't matter who goes home for whatever reason, will be here in some form or other right the way through to Verona. But you're right, Daniel. Tom Dumoulin, the 2017 champion, last year's runner-up, crashed in. Well, we had to piece this together at the finish, didn't we? Because the television pictures didn't really show us exactly what had happened. There were 2 crashes in very quick succession. The first on a long straight bit of road where riders were going left and right into the ditch. Chad Hager was one of the riders in the ditch.
We think that crash was caused by an Ineos rider, possibly Puccio, touching wheels and fairly near the front of the bunch.
An ambulance siren in the background there, maybe taking Tom Dumoulin to the Sunweb Hotel.
Because we've had some good news, haven't we?
We have. No fractures for Tom Dumoulin. X-rays.
And staying.
But he didn't look in a good way, did he, as he crossed the line? He had a lot of blood pouring from a wound on his left knee. Daniel, you noted that he was wearing red socks in the first place, but they were very red, with all the blood that had trickled down the length of his leg. And he had a limp, and he didn't look... It didn't look at that moment like we would see Tom Dumoulin carry on in the Giro, but if there are no fractures, that gives Dumoulin and Sunweb a decision to make tonight, doesn't it?
Well, and they will be favoured by this slightly uneventful first week in terms of climbs, in terms of the profile of this Giro d'Italia. He's got 3 or 4 days in which to hopefully recuperate, ready for the time trial, which was really the first big rendezvous of this Giro. But with the time that he's lost, Napalm, does he now just cut his losses and think, well, he was probably going to go to the Tour de France anyway, and it might be a good excuse just to switch his focus onto that now.
Yeah, I suppose that a lot will depend on how he feels after a night's sleep, how his leg is, and what the kind of the risk of carrying on riding. Tomorrow is quite a short stage, only 140 kilometres, I think. Finishes with a tricky city centre circuit, rain forecast again, which means that people will be nervous of more crashes. But there's a couple of more long stages before the time trial, so it will be a case of evaluating any potential damage that could be done, thinking more longer term for Dumoulin. Let's have the tale of the Tappa, stage 4, from Orbetello to Frascati. And, familiar faces in the breakaway again. Marco Frapporti of Androni, Mirko Maestri of Bardiani, and Damiano Cima of Nippo Vinifantini, who've all been in breaks already in this Giro. They were the 3 riders who got away in the first kilometre. Their lead really concertinaed up and down, didn't it? It was 10 minutes at one point, then back down to 6, and then up to nearly a 9 again. But with 50 kilometres to go, it was under 5 minutes and coming down. And with, well, on the run-in, it was obvious that they were going to get caught. And they got caught not too early, unlike yesterday, which put the race into quite a strange phase. Today, they were caught. And then we were wondering what kind of finish in Frascati it would be. Would the sprinters survive, or would it be one for the likes of Diego Ulissi or maybe even Simon Yates or Primoz Roglic? Well, we didn't really get to find out because the crashes intervened. As we say, the first crash brought a lot of people down, maybe reduced the bunch to about 50, and the second crash skittled it down even more. Apparently that happened on a roundabout, the Dumoulin crash. Simon Yates came down in that
too. He did. We heard from him earlier, didn't we, in the opening montage. He also said that he'd hit his left side, his left knee, but he didn't seem to think there was going to be any problem for him tomorrow.
So that meant a pretty small group hit the bottom of this 2K climb here. Some of the sprinters, Elia Viviani being one, were shelled out fairly early on. But it was a weird mix of riders in there, because you had Ulissi and Conti, you had Primoz Roglic, the pink jersey, the only GC rider to make that final
without
split.
Any teammates?
without any teammates there. Richard Carapaz, who of course won a stage in last year's Giro in impressive style, plus the last two standing sprinters, Caleb Ewan and Pascal Ackermann. Carapaz took a flyer. Ewan hesitated. Well, they all hesitated, really. Carapaz got the gap, and Ewan set off after him in the final 300 metres and was gaining, but couldn't quite get the Ecuadorian on the line.
It was a really interesting mix of riders that we were left with there, wasn't it, Lionel? Because we, this morning, we spoke to various people and everyone was pretty unsure about what kind of stage it was going to be or what kind of finale it was going to be. Some said that there might even be some GC action. Some thought that it would be for Scattisti punchers, people like Battaglini. I spoke to him this morning. He was going for it. And some thought the sprinters might have a go. And we had all three kinds of rider, really. We had Ulissi there, who was one of the favourites anyway. We had Carapaz and Roglic. And then we had Ewan, who I thought looked as though he got up that climb pretty easily and pretty well and just got his timing completely wrong.
Yeah, as I say, kind of just hesitated. Again, difficult for a rider like Ewan, when you see Carapaz go, what do you do? Do you use your speed to get on the wheel and sit there, maybe dragging everybody else up, or do you wait for a moment to open up a more conventional sprint, which what he opted for in the end, but it didn't quite work.
Without a lead out man. Napalm, did you know that this circuit, and this might have confused, all of the teams knew that the finishing climb was different to the one that they'd been told about months ago when the course was unveiled, but it was changed very recently. It was changed about 3 weeks ago, and it was originally supposed to be a 3 kilometer final climb, much harder than the one that they actually did today. And Matt White in particular, Mitchelton Scott director, thought that this was a much more dangerous finale than the one that was originally planned.
Well, Carapaz, the stage winner, got the 10-second time bonus, of course, gained around half a minute on some key GC riders. He'd lost 46 seconds yesterday, so he's clawed back a little bit of that time. But just to run through the time losses for the key men, because Primoz Roglic was the only rider to be in that group from the GC contenders. He's the pink jersey, of course. At 18 seconds, we had Miguel Angel Lopez, Simon Yates, Rafael Majka, Vincenzo Nibali, Bob Jungels, and Ilnur Zakarin. Mikel Landa lost 44 seconds today. Tom Dumoulin, of course, 4 minutes. Domenico Pozzovivo, 10 minutes. So Roglic has gained almost as much time today as he gained in the opening time trial in Bologna on Saturday, and now leads Simon Yates by 35 seconds, and Nibali is third, another 4 seconds back.
Wow, Lionel, we've got some news hot off the press.
I thought I saw your phone light up there. What is it?
Well, it's more beef. It is more beef. Mikel Landa's not happy.
What? Well, sometimes doesn't look happy, does he? Sometimes looks like, there's a rain cloud over his head.
Over that magnificent monobrow. He said, he's talking about the crash. He says, bleep Yates. He is a bleep. Rides like a bleep. He made me crash on a roundabout.
Wow. So Mikel Landa blaming Simon Yates for the crash there.
And we it sounds like it.
Has anyone seen this crash? We can't verify this one way or the other, can we?
No, it's like the moon landings or Egan Bernal's. Egan Bernal. By the way, now the Buffalo's gone, Egan Bernal definitely broke his collarbone, because there's been photographic evidence produced since the Buff made that scurrilous, ridiculous, absurd allegation.
And we're happy to set the record straight on that.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons Run.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our title sponsors. Their support enables us to be here at the Giro d'Italia and also cover the other two Grand Tours and provide free weekly episodes and other things all throughout the season for people to listen to. Thank you very much to Rafa. They are launching their Aero range, and that consists of an Aero jersey for men and women, an Aero suit for men and women, and pro team bib shorts. And these are exactly the same as those being worn by the EF Education First riders at this Giro. The Aero products have been developed in the wind tunnel. They've taken years to develop, and they prioritise 6 things. They are the drag coefficient, temperature regulation, pressure mapping, moisture evaporation, fabric bonding, and precision fit. Rafa's made advances or improvements in each of these areas to cheat the wind and improve the ride. So if you want to be even more aero on the bike than I'm sure you all already are, then check out the Rafa Aero range. It's been developed for years to save you seconds. Well, we're joined by royalty, Italian royalty, Ciro Scognamiglio of La Gazzetta dello Sport, the famous pink newspaper, Italy's finest newspaper, I think everyone would agree. Ciro, how are you?
Really well, thank you. And with really a big news for our listeners. As I wrote before on Twitter, there is something new, something special only for today. Lionel.
Is it the Italian Prime Minister coming to the Giro tomorrow?
I can confirm this.
Yeah, but is that what you were talking about? Is that the big news?
No. The big news is that just for today, dear listeners, we are not going to talk with me about holidays, about beaches, about sun, but only about cycling. Poor cycling only today.
So what's the big cycling news then, Ciro?
Well, for sure, in my opinion, the big loss of Tom Dumoulin, but in this final, also Vincenzo Nibali, in a certain way, was lucky because he was really close to Salvatore Puccio when at 6Ks to go there was the crash, and so he was not involved in the crash, just for a question of 1 second or also less. So in a certain way he could have lost more. So in a certain way he's a survivor of this day. Certainly he lost 16 seconds by Roglic, but in a certain way he's safe.
Ciro, we're used to seeing and hearing Lo Squalo coming to Grand Tours not convinced about his own chances, always with, you know, some kind of issue, he's not trained as he would want, or his preparation's not gone that well. This time he seems to be incredibly confident. Is it justified, and is he still confident?
For sure he's confident. This is true. We have to consider that, I don't know the exact word in English, but he's really scaramantic,
So superstitious.
He's really superstitious. So it's difficult then he says openly, I'm really well, I'm going to win this race, as for example Simon Yates some days, but mainly it's a question of superstition. As a matter of fact, this time he's convinced of his possibilities, he's really well prepared, he knows that it will be very difficult to arrive with the pink jersey in Verona, but he's confident about his possibility, and I think that also his shape is quite good.
Do you think that's why Nibali didn't react so well to Simon Yates's very confident comments the other day?
Well, he thought that in a certain way it was maybe from Simon Yates a kind of not really showed a lot of respect for his rivals, Vincenzo Nibali said, but as a matter of fact it's also said, maybe it has been a joke, I don't know exact the context of his word. So in my opinion, he's not really angry with Simon. I mean, he also said something like this, but he was not really angry.
Tom Dumoulin loves Italy. He's won the Giro 2 years ago. He's on the podium again last year. He's holidayed in Italy several times. Really loves the country. How does Italy feel about Tom Dumoulin?
Well, I mean, in this case, as a matter of fact, I was a little bit surprised of his choice to come back in the Giro, because in a very first moment in the winter, I have the impression that it could go on only for the Tour this year. No, the relationship is quite good, and also Italian public loves him. When he arrives at the finish line, 4 minutes more or less after the winner, the tifosi were really proud of him in a certain way. I really saw a great atmosphere around him. Certainly now, after this big crash, his possibility for the Giro are really few. It's a shame. This is a shame for sure.
Back to beaches tomorrow?
Exactly. I would like to know from our listeners. I would like to maybe, I don't know if we can create a poll about this. I'm better when I speak about cycling or about other stuff?
Well, we'll ask Twitter that tomorrow, shall we?
Chute, chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, popping into our Giro coverage to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by The Economist, which is a magazine that is about far more than just economics and finance. It covers a range of subjects from world politics and business to science, technology, the arts and even sport. It helps readers sift through the noise and get to the heart of the story, but it's not unbiased. It presents different sides of the argument, and when required, it puts its own opinion on the line too. Rich, you've been reading The Economist. What has caught your eye in the magazine?
Well, a couple of things, Lionel. First, I should point to, at the end of the magazine, an obituary of Lira McKee, the Irish journalist who was killed recently, A Muckraker's Life, it's called. It's a beautifully written, very, very personal tribute to her. Really, I learned a lot about her reading that. Also an article, Bad Vibrations, about fracking. We're all fracking experts now, aren't we? Those of us who cover professional cycling with Team Ineos coming into the sport. But it's a really interesting article about the regulations in the UK really stifling and holding back the industry. The article says that most of the money spent by the fracking industry in the UK has been on lobbying rather than actually fracking. And it predicts a pretty bleak future for fracking in the UK. One of the issues in the UK is that firms are obliged to suspend fracking whenever tremors reach a magnitude of 0.5. But in other parts of the world, including America, a magnitude of up to 4 is allowed. And there's been a lot of talk recently from Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who runs Ineos, of course, about how the fracking industry is really booming in America. No pun intended there. And I don't know how people in America feel about that. It'd be interesting. But I'd say it's very interesting, fact-filled, opinion light article on fracking in The Economist.
Well, The Economist is a smart guide to the forces changing your world. So if you've never stopped asking questions, get your free copy delivered to your door now by texting the word cycling to 78070. That's cycling to 78070.
Well, that's very kind of Luca, the sports editor of Gazzetta dello Sport, to buy us a coffee this afternoon, isn't it?
It is, Lionel. Want anything to go with it? It's about that time in the afternoon. Yeah. Usually have a snack at this time.
I would have a snack, yeah. Something, maybe something sweet. What do you recommend?
Okay, leave it to me. Mi da una pupazza? Vuole? No, non si preoccupi. Grazie. Here you go, Lionel.
What on earth is that?
Well, it's a gingerbread woman with three breasts.
Is that a deliberate mistake?
I actually don't think it's gingerbread. Luca, what is this made of? You know what goes into this.
It is honey and wet, and you can eat it.
But why the three breasts? I actually know the answer to this.
I mean, there's got to be a reason. I mean, you wouldn't put three breasts on a not quite gingerbread woman, would you?
Well, legend... Oh, our coffee's getting cold. The barman's getting antsy. Well, legend has it, Lionel, that it has three breasts because it's a midwife. And a midwife with a special knack of becalming children. And she becalmed children mainly because out of the third breast came Frascati wine. Which we're going to taste in just a minute, aren't we?
Perfect, I think.
Lionel's about 15k to go, and there are going to be riders arriving in about 20 minutes, and I've still got three-breasted gingerbread one, la pupasa. I can't go around interviewing riders with this. We need to eat it.
Well, or give it to one of the riders as a congratulations.
We need to taste it. Taste it.
Okay. Well, I'll have a little
go
bit,
for the
a little bit of the head here.
That's the head's not really the head's not really the problem.
I snapped her head off. It's got coffee beans for eyes and nose. Here we go. Okay, it's got the consistency of a gingerbread man or woman. Oh,
not sure, are you?
So honey and flour,
wheat,
a honey dough. Quite sweet, but it's dry. And a bit claggy.
You're not convinced. No. And now you've left me with a headless, three-breasted midwife.
So, Daniel, here we are in Frascati. You've already made me eat a three-breasted honey-bred woman from the little cafe over the other side of the square there. Now we have two glasses of what look like identical white wines. Well, these are Frascati's, right?
Lionel, I want you to taste one and tell me. One is definitely Frascati. One might be something else. I want you to tell me what it is.
Oh, well, I'm probably not going to know, but I don't mind tasting them. Here we go.
Okay, next class. What are you looking for, Napon? Well, you know, bear in mind the Romans used to call Frascati the gold, the golden wine.
Well, I can see that because it's really
liquid gold.
It's really full and fruity, isn't it? It's very fruity in the back of the throat, I think. There, the second one is a bit drier.
Yeah, this is the point at which you're supposed to say est.
Well, I don't know what it is, do I?
Well, it is est di Montefiascone.
Which is a strange name for a wine.
It is a strange name for a wine. And this is recognised as a DOGC, so it's has its own sort of special region and it has to respect certain rules. Est di Montefiascone, because in 1111, napalm, that's quite hard to say, the year 1111, Henry V of Germany was on his way to Rome to receive the title of Emperor of the Roman Empire from Papa Pasquale, the Pasquale II, the Pope, you know the fella.
Oh yeah.
Anyway,
one of the good popes.
He was accompanied by a bishop, Johannes de Fuch, second slightly uncomfortable name of the podcast, who was a very big wine buff, and Johannes de Fuch also had a butler. He wanted the butler to go off down the road and find good wine for them to drink on their way to Rome. When the butler was just outside Rome, he stopped at a place called Montefiascone, and the instructions he'd received from Johannes de Fuch was that when he found a good wine, he should put est exclamation mark if it was a good wine, est double exclamation mark if it was an even better wine. And what did he find in Montefiascone? He found a wine that he thought was the greatest thing he'd ever tasted, and on the door of the house or the inn, the locanda, where he found this special wine, this liquid gold, he wrote est exclamation mark, est double exclamation mark, and est triple exclamation mark. And this story, this legend, probably is a legend, let's face it, has been documented throughout, well, since that day. It appears in a lot of different texts and going back centuries, and so much so that now it gives its name to this wine, which is not, let's face it, it's not the most exciting wine. It's made with local grapes, Trebbiano, Toscano, Trebbiano Giallo. It's very cheap. We're not an elitist podcast here.
No, €2.99.
Yeah, we picked this bottle up from the supermarket, €2.99. It's quite low in alcohol. The yields are very high, and there's a bit of a drive in Montefiascone to up the ante slightly and improve the quality and turn it into a bit of a higher end product. But anyway, it's perfectly drinkable, isn't it?
It is, yeah, perfectly drinkable. And well, one team that won't be toasting any success tonight is Lotto Soudal. They came very, very close with Caleb Ewan. First of all, he had to avoid the two crashes and get himself into that front group. This morning, I spoke to Lotto Soudal's Bart Layson, sports director, because I wondered, first of all, why Ewan was only in 15th place yesterday, a little bit off the back of the sprinters, beaten to the line by Simon Yates even. And the reason for that was that a couple of teammates of his got caught up in yesterday's crash, and so he was left on his own. He had to do a bit more than he wanted to do, I suspect, and was out of position when it came to the sprint finish. Today he avoided the two crashes, and I thought from the way he won the stage in the UAE Tour at Hatterdam in February, he had a good chance on this climb, particularly after we'd seen exactly what it was like. It was hard, but not like a, you know, not a super hard finish. Anyway, at the finish, I spoke to Caleb Ewan about his day and tried to gauge whether he was happy to be there or disappointed not to win. First of all, can you tell me how you avoided the crash? Was it simply that it was behind you?
I could hear it, but I never saw any of the crashes. And yeah, I guess that's thanks to my team for always keeping me in good position. And in a tricky final like this, it's so important to stay up the front, as we saw today. And they did a great job to keep me there.
When you looked at who'd made it into that group, did you have a little moment to weigh up who was in there with you?
Yeah, I saw a few of the good sprinters in there, like Ackerman and Dumas and Viviani. I saw all got through. So, yeah, and I knew that if it came down to a sprint, then I would have some pretty tough competition there. And then out of the climbers, I didn't really know who was there, but I knew that there was always going to be someone there that wanted to attack, so that's always going to make it difficult.
We've seen you win a couple of really tough finishes this year. I'm thinking of Hatterdam in the UAE Tour, for example. As a couple of the other sprinters dropped off, did you think your chances, your odds were improving?
I was in front of all of them, I think, most of the time on that climb, so I couldn't actually see like their body language or anything to see if they were suffering or not. And in a scenario like that, I kind of tell myself, you know, if I'm suffering, then I hope they're also suffering. So, you know, I just have to concentrate on doing my own race and doing my own sprint. And yeah, I mean, if I get beaten, then I get beaten. But yeah, I just try to race my own race in the end.
And when Canapaz went, what was going through your mind? Were you thinking, no, that's too early, I can't risk closing that down? Were you hoping somebody else would move?
Well, I thought, so I saw him go and then I kind of hesitated. I was thinking of going when he went, and then I saw UAE, they started to accelerate a bit, and I thought, all right, perfect, then I can stay in the wheels. But when they accelerated, they kind of was still losing, losing time to him. So yeah, then as soon as I saw that they were kind of dying in the end a little bit, then that's when I jumped, and that was about 300 to go. So it was kind of earlier than I wanted to start, but yeah, I mean, I had to go then if I wanted to have any chance of catching him, and yeah, I just didn't have the legs in the end.
So slightly disappointed not to win, but you must have been pleased to be in the position to have the chance, and the fact that you were gaining on him so quickly as the line was coming up.
For sure. I'm happy that I was in the position to even go for the win, and I think a lot of guys, yeah, that were caught behind the crash weren't in that position. And so yeah, I'm happy I was there, but yeah, I'm very disappointed that I couldn't win in the end.
So Daniel, the sprinting scores on the doors so far are Ackermann 1, Gaviria 0.5, because he wasn't too chuffed with the manner of the victory he got handed to him yesterday, and everybody else still waiting to get off the mark. And the sprinting stakes, the ratchet turns up one more notch, because it's one fewer opportunity to win a stage tomorrow. Surely an absolute cast iron sprint day, a shorter day. I also spoke to Bart Leysen about who was going to do the chasing duties, because Daniel, you spoke to De Koenig Quickstep and
Spencer Viviani.
And they said they wouldn't chase.
No, they thought it was too hard for Viviani, the finale today. I mean, he was in a better mood than he had been last night. Seemed to have come to terms with his disqualification yesterday.
Yeah, well, he really wasn't happy last night. We heard some more reaction from Viviani after his relegation yesterday. He seemed to be suggesting that he might just go home before the finish, because his chances of winning the Ciclamino jersey were dealt a double blow, because he lost 50 points for being stripped of the stage win and was penalised another 50 points for the disqualification for the irregular sprint. So he's got ground to make up if he wants to win the points competition. But it was interesting that De Koenig Quickstep were thinking they wouldn't chase. Lotto Soudal's take on it was that they would see who else was prepared to help chase before they committed, and they committed a little bit. Bora Hansgrohe probably did a bit more. Groupama FDJ did quite a lot at certain points for Arnaud Démare. Really, with three riders up the road for 235 kilometres, I don't even know they got 10 plus minutes at one point. It never looked in doubt, I think, that they weren't going to stay away, were they, those three? Just too hard to stay out there all day.
Demar's been disappointing so far. He was third yesterday, wasn't he? Ended up second yesterday, didn't he? But today he was in that group, and it was a good opportunity for him to go for the stage win. And
who could probably do well on a climb like
that. Yeah, and unlike Ewan, didn't really mount any kind of challenge.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. This is the fourth year that Science in Sport have enabled us to get round Italy, covering the Giro d'Italia with nightly episodes. They came on board in 2016 and have backed us ever since. We're very grateful to them for that. If you would like to get 25% off all Science in Sport products, that's energy bars and powders that mix up into energy drinks and energy gels, then go to scienceinsport.com, enter the code SISCP25, and you can get 25% off all of their products. Daniel, the GC loser yesterday, I suppose, not that we're talking about him as a potential winner of the Giro d'Italia, but Team Ineos' Teo Gegenhardt had a very good ride in the time trial in Bologna, was lying seventh overall, and then he lost almost a minute and a half in yesterday's crash. You caught up with him this morning.
I did, Napon.
You're moving pretty gingerly, Teo, but you're always pretty ginger. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm okay, actually. Better than I expected. I thought the knee would be stiffer, but it's not too bad, actually. So, yeah, just all about doing the small things like the compression and the ice and all this stuff and just keeping your head up, not losing sight of the process, whether that's for, yeah, whatever. It's impossible to say what will happen, so you just keep looking.
And the crash itself, I mean, it wasn't a question of bad positioning. It was, you were pretty unlucky, weren't you, with a mechanical failure, is that right?
Yeah, I was in a really good position. Just, I don't really know exactly what happened, to be honest, but I was start to sprint out the corner, pull full on the bars as you do, and then flying through the air. So I think, yeah, somehow the chain or something slipped or came off or jumped, but I'm not sure, to be honest.
And there's not a lot of pressure on you, I know, to finish top 10 or whatever at GC, but are you sort of disappointed to have leaked that little bit of time? Because I know you're ambitious.
Yeah, 100% is probably the biggest opportunity of my career so far. I think I've only ever had the chance to really ride GC in one or two races since I turned pro. So, yeah, it's pretty gutting, but I think it's important to be, you know, disappointed yesterday, and then today you just have to move on. There's nothing else you can do. Still a lot of racing to come, and just try to make the most of it.
Very philosophical response there from Teo Gegenhardt.
He was quite rude about my trainers. But anyway.
Well, you know, are you both looking forward to Arsenal's appearance in the Europa League
final? Yeah, it's a while
you?
Off, isn't it? A couple of weeks away. A couple of weeks away.
Middle of next week. No, it's the final week, isn't it? Well, if you're both still here in the Giro, I'm sure you can hook up and watch that, but we're not going to talk about football. Although, one man who is clearly inspired by football is Gianni Savio, because every day he picks his formation for the Giro d'Italia, his Androni team. Well, how's he lined up today?
Well, guess what?
The formation today, Gianni Savio, Androni Sidermec, what is it?
Yes, today, 1-4-2-1.
Same as yesterday?
Yes, the same as yesterday, because today is a stage similar, and I think that we away one sprint in the finish, but if there is a breakaway, the one is Marco Frapporti, and two are always Mattia Cattaneo and Fausto Masnada for the overall classic.
How will Savio be feeling after getting a man in the break again today?
Good, I think. Yeah. Frapporti is doing his job, isn't he? But his bomber, Belletti, is not really coming up with the goods as yet, is he?
So where's Frapporti playing? Is he kind of...
Well, the way Gianni gives his formation, it kind of sounds like he's the goalkeeper, but he's more of a sort of roaming... I would say he's more of a sort of roaming trequartista, number 10 kind of
free
figure
roll.
At the moment. Free roll. Yeah.
Well, where are we? We're in Frascati tonight. What's on the menu tonight?
The menu tonight, well, we'll be drinking some wine, Lionel. I'm not really... So it's one of the anomalies of Italian cuisine that Roman food is not that sort of celebrated and not that vaunted. There are a few dishes like amatriciana sauce, which, you know, you can get pretty much anywhere in the world, I think. But we were in quite a gastronomic hotspot last night, weren't we, Napalm? Mm. Down in the Maremma region, Max Lely country. We saw a nice exhibition, didn't we, in a supermarket earlier today of fantastic period bicycles. Yeah. Old Bianchi's, Fausto Coppi's Bianchi. This was just in a co-op, wasn't it?
It was.
And Legnano bikes. And then at the end of the row, at the end of this fantastic exhibition, was a decathlon ridden by Max Lely in 2002 Tour de France.
When he was with Cofidis, of course. But he's a local guy, Max Lely.
From Maremma, where we were this morning, last night, when we had that lovely, those lovely peachy, typical kind of spaghetti, thick spaghetti. And we had that with artichoke, with like an artichoke ragu, didn't we?
Yeah, my starter was a buffalo mozzarella, Richard, buffalo mozzarella with anchovies on top. Not a mix that I would in a million years have thought of, but it was nice.
And we had another famous dish from there, panna di pomodoro, which is kind of bread and tomato mixed up. Doesn't sound very appealing, very good, very salty, but lovely.
Yep.
Zuppa di ceci, chickpea soup.
And we were sitting in basically a delicatessen, really. It was a restaurant in a kind of crescent-shaped delicatessen. There's a massive floor-to-ceiling wine rack just behind us.
And we had some Morellino di Scansano wine, which is another Sangiovese. We've had a lot of Sangiovese so far. It's quite a juicy, sort of plummy, relatively light for Sangiovese.
Back to the cycling and some news that's a little bit harder to digest for UAE Team Emirates. And that's the news that the Colombian rider Juan Sebastian Molano was basically withdrawn by the team from the Giro d'Italia this morning for an irregular medical test, or was it a blood test, Daniel? What do we know so far?
Well, we don't know a whole lot. The team have not released too many details. They're investigating.
But their head of medical is Dr. Jeroen Swart, who I think, well, certainly came to our attention on the podcast because he was the person who did the physiological tests on Chris Froome a few years ago, and this year has started working with UAE Team Emirates. I don't know whether he'll be able to talk about what's gone on.
Yeah, we'll catch
days,
up with him tomorrow because he's at the Giro. I saw him testing out some electric bikes today. But yeah, we'll try and catch up with him tomorrow. Molano was a guy who... Yeah, who came from, I wouldn't say came out of nowhere, but it seemed to be another great bit of scouting from Machin Fernandez, who picked up an awful lot of good, young, talented riders who have since blossomed at, well, what is now Decoinic Quickstep, is now at UAE. And Molano was signed at the start of last year. He won a race pretty much straight away. So he was an interesting rider, but yeah, we don't know what's happened there.
Well, before we just wrap up with a little summary of how the GC looks after today's stage, I just want to tell all of the listeners that if you want to ask us a question for the rest day press conference episode, which we will be doing on Monday, then you can send a voice message to our WhatsApp number. That's +447971338205. If you miss that, you can obviously rewind a bit and listen to the number, or go to our Twitter bio, cycling_podcast, and basically record a question. Keep them tight. If you can keep your question under 60 seconds, that's really helpful. You can ask us anything about the Giro so far, the race, the riders, the course, what's coming up, what we've seen so far, and we will try to answer as many of those questions as we can on the rest day on Monday. But Daniel, the GC, Primoz Roglic tonight will presumably be absolutely delighted. I had a brief chat with the Jumbo-Visma sports director Jan Boven at the finish, and he said that while they're obviously happy with the time gain today, 16 more seconds to add to the 19 he took over Simon Yates in the time trial in Bologna, it's not necessarily the way that they want to gain time, but that it's testament to how well Roglic is riding that he was so far forwards, keeping himself out of trouble, not even necessarily relying solely on teammates to do that for him.
Do you know, I heard one bit of gossip at the finish line, and there's a theory among rival teams that Laurens De Ploes is ill. Have they spoken about that in the team, or is that well known?
He did lose a lot of time today.
Correct.
Yeah. Interesting, because he was pretty happy in Bologna after his time trial effort. He was well in the top 10, wasn't he? But yeah, that's a rapid decline for De Ploes, who will be key for Roglic in the mountains if he gets that far. But the lead that Roglic has now over Simon Yates is 35 seconds, Nibali at 39, Lopez at 44, and then there's, you know, the gaps start to open up, and already it's a minute and 6 seconds back to Davide Formolo in 10th place. And, well, the likes of Mikel Landa, he'll be disappointed because he's already 22nd, 1 minute 49. That's a lot of time to make up. Sort of time that already makes it look like victory is kind of out of the question for Landa, unless there's some dramatic turnaround. So Movistar's day made by Carapaz's stage win, but they will also look at the GC and think, well, we've got two guys overall who have got a bit of work to do to get up into the top five, where you would think they would both want to be. Landa because of his ability, but Canapaz because of the result he got last year, fourth overall.
Napalm, we're going to Terracina tomorrow. We're going, so we're south of Rome tomorrow. Terracina, it was a popular destination for Italian teams and when they had their training camps in the 90s. It also used to be, people used to kind of joke and laugh and make cynical comments about the fact that I think the only the Italian licensee for EPO used to be based in Terracina, but I'm going to investigate that and I'll give a definitive answer on that tomorrow.
Also tomorrow will be the second episode of Kilometer Zero, which is being produced now by one of our producers. The first one was
being produced by one of our producers. I hope so.
That's what they do, the producers. They produce things. We just kind of pour all of our sound and audio clips into a big pot, and then they create
like
a lovely dish.
Pig thrown from the from the balcony of the Palazzo Comunale in Bologna. We dummy to throw it, and we're just emptying the sort of basting juices.
But don't miss Kilometre Zero. It's a kind of a mini documentary looking at one particular aspect of the Giro or Italy. Daniel, your opening episode was all about Bologna and its three nicknames. This one is about fatherhood and becoming a parent. Conor Dunn became a parent just 10 days before the Giro, and I wanted to find out from him and from some others, you know, what effect that has on their racing. So that will be out in the morning. We'll be back tomorrow evening with stage 5 from the Giro d'Italia in Terracina. So until then, Daniel,
good evening from Frascati.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.